Hi, everyone. I'm aware that my voice may not carry quite as well as Tenny's did, so you in the back make a signal if I'm starting to disappear. I have water. Feeling a lot of gratitude for the generosity of this gathering. It's pretty awesome. So tonight I'll try to not abuse your generosity. We'll see how we go. since before, you know, as soon as the four of us sort of landed on a feeling about what we wanted to do here, I found myself really hanging out with the images that we're working with and wondering what do they have to do with sitting on a cushion and breathing. And that's what I hope to talk about this evening. And so beginning with this image of riding the dragon, of Wen Yin riding the dragon that's at the head of our hall, the statue there was given to me by Tenny when I became a Roshi, and sits on my teaching altar. Is a real companion, which doesn't mean that I know what she means. I've been living with them for some time, and really haven't felt any desire to pin it down. And I'm curious about that, actually. You know, why not? Why don't I need to know what that means? And part of the reason, I think, is because I feel their presence as encouragement. And maybe that's enough for me. And maybe that's noodle-headed. But what place does an image like that have in the practice of real life? The image of an ideal, beautiful being of compassion, whatever that is, riding the dragon over seas rough and smooth, never a hair ruffled. So I've been investigating. And first of all, through various dragon images, and one is in a koan that Tenny brought in last night. And I think Andrew did also the first day. Someone asked, what is my heart mind? It's a fair question. What is my heart mind? An ancestor replied, all the worlds in the universe are your heart mind. What if I accept that as being, as what if I think that person was really saying what they mean? You know, what if I don't just think they're being fancy and philosophical? What if they really mean it? All the worlds in the universe are my heart mind. If that's so, someone asked, then there's really no particular place for my body to be. You know, am I just diffuse? I seem to have a body. What about it? And the response is, that's exactly the place for your body to be. That is exactly the place. So where is that? The person asks. The great ocean, vast and deep. I don't get it, says the person. Dragons and fish play freely, leaping and diving. And one of the things I love about koan language like this is it's not going to tell you as much what as how it is, right? How is it in the great deep ocean of you, of being? The place to be where dragons and fish play freely, leaping and diving. So, okay, in the ocean, here's a water being, right? A water being of large spaces, this dragon, playing, powerful, joyful. Do I feel that sometimes? By the kinetic identification Tenny was talking about, do I feel that? Sure, that's not that hard, right? And treasure it, yeah? Does it matter if that there's part of my mind also saying, well, you know, really, there are no dragons, you know? it doesn't really seem to be relevant, that question. Can I feel that? That the place to be, for my body to be, is like a dragon in that vast, wet ocean full of life? All the worlds are the particular place? Great ocean, vast and deep. But you have been sitting in this hall for a day and a half, maybe. You know how you go a lot of places, don't you? You go a lot of places, and some of them are vast and deep, and some of them are itchy and particular and unpleasant. And what is it to play in all of that? So, here I am, you know, in my daily life, lying in on a dragon on the altar, plodding along, tripping over my dress, making messes, trying to clean them up, you know, in that ocean? Do I love it? Yeah, I do. Is that ocean in danger? Yes, it is. Do I grieve that? You bet. And yet, a place to be in the place, yeah, I can feel that. And if I'm to be any good to anybody, where else should my body rest? But in the freest part of the universe that is my heart mind. If I wish to be any good to anybody, I can't think of a better place than the one suggested in this koan. So that dragon, the one that moves freely, in and out of clarity, no fixed abode required. And speaking of which, you know, do I sometimes feel anything but that, you know? Deeply desiring clarity, wishing for it so much while falling through the world, falling through my life. What would it even be to see clearly while falling this way? What kind of clear seeing would that be? And so sometimes it feels more like old and dried up, right? Used up, dry, like that other koan, where Juedo, in the in a verse about not abiding in clarity, a koan we've also brought in here, says dragon murmurings in a dried up tree aren't used up. And so this one has less of a feeling of an image, an idealized image of a dragon, more like what does the dragon do? What about those murmurings? And so I can recognize it. Yeah, sometimes it's like that too, right? Seems like everything's all used up, I'm all used up, you know, I'm getting pretty dry and brittle. And yet, you know, suddenly two cardinals, whoosh, whoosh, you know, a pair, the male just brilliant red, redder than red, with his crest and whoosh, across the path, and the female right with him, textured, you know, equally red, but just a different pattern. The two of them just appearing like that, not dried up. Or I learn a new word, or hear the voice of a loved one, you know, hear my little granddaughters giggling for nothing, you know, but for the joy of it. Or watch one of them, you know, coming into the world. And, you know, keenly feeling the grief of someone, you know, dear to one of our members whose baby is born and dies at the same time, dies in childbirth. That too is not all dried up, you know, literally. A language. So then, you know, these murmurings, those ones that just come and go like that, often have the feel of what Jiaozhou says, like seeing a word you're not familiar with. You don't know its meaning, but you recognize the handwriting. I feel a kind of kinship between the dragon murmurings and that, yeah? The things that happen, and they happen too quickly for us to try to pin them down. But there they are, talking to us. And I'm wondering, at those times in your meditation, when the thoughts are drifting, directionless, you know, appearing and dissolving, what if instead of cursing them for being there, without your permission, I just let them continue to talk under their breath. What's the subtle sound of them? Is this a sort of thinking thoughts without thought? Does the sound of the way have to be clear to us to count? You know, when you think about it, it's kind of silly. You know, it only counts if I get it. And so I've noticed that when I let my body rest in stillness, not doing anything, and I let my mind follow my body, also not actively doing anything, then it's a little like a kind of listening to an ancient language, dragon language, you know, which communicates without what we usually think of as meaning. So much of what we actually experience and know, you know, almost in the biblical sense, is not something that language covers. So, why not let those little thoughts and emotions and perceptions, everything that comes through, in a way, honor them, you know, honor them as that other language. It seems helpful to me, anyway. And so it feels like the language of being. And the floor is telling its being. The cardinal and my knee and my belly and your breathing and someone's sneeze and the ache of my heart for the suffering in the world. It's just telling its being. There's no harm in that. Why not include it? A student asks about that dragon murmuring, what? You know? And Zhixuan replied, I still have joy. So there's that dragon. And most powerful for me, maybe from childhood on, are the ones that you see, you know, sometimes in a cloud for a couple minutes. You know, and you can watch it and sort of go, okay, is this still a dragon? You know, or is it, nah, it's not a dragon anymore, you know? And, or in the spray of a waterfall or the spray leaping up off of a rock in the creek. And or that blue dragon that's coiled in the stream bed in Musō Soseki's poem, or the blue dragon in her cave protecting the Dharma down deep, that blue dragon in the cave, where the, you know, the verse asks, how many times have I gone down to the cave of the blue dragon for you? There's a kind of, am I still willing to go there? You know, there's a kind of wistfulness in that, yeah. So in temples in China, I got to visit once with my daughter for a few weeks, and we just went temple hopping. Mm-hmm. And, you know, dragons, lots and lots of dragons. And in the Japanese painting, so many dragons. And so there are quite a lot of stories going back, like, I don't know if I wrote that down, but like to, you know, 800 BCE or older, you know, really old dragon stories. And so those dragons, a lot of the stories about those dragons, and Andrew told some, you know, involve both the how tricky dragons are to work with and how powerful, that who bring, you know, desperately needed water in the form of rain and rivers, and also terribly destructive floods. And so there was a cult of the five dragon kings, the dragon kings of the five directions, that was registered in Taoist scripture from the Tang dynasty, that are in the Dunhuang caves, where so many images and scriptures have been found. And so these five, the azure dragon, or blue-green dragon, or green dragon of God of the East and the essence of spring, the red dragon of the South and the essence of summer, the white dragon is the dragon god of the West and the essence of autumn, yellow dragon of the center, associated with late summer. The black dragon, also called the dark dragon or the mysterious dragon, of the north and the essence of winter. And there were instructions in a text called the luxuriant dew of the spring and autumn annals. Instructions under the Seeking Rain chapter that prescribed earthenware figurines of greater and lesser dragons of a specific color according to season, those colors, and they were to be placed upon the altar in the particular direction they belonged to for these rituals calling for rain. So we're talking about shamanic layer of our tradition, right? And lest we be too snooty about it, remember that we chant the Shosai Michijo Narani quite frequently, and certainly in times when we're worried about somebody's safety. At least some of us do. And we have other shamanic aspects of our own, which it's kind of easy to kind of gloss over them sometimes, but I think that's a mistake. I think to maintain a curiosity about them and follow your own, your heart mind in informing relationship with those is kind of important. It's not, we don't just do meditation, you know? There are a lot of forms of practice that are in our way. And then there was, you know, argument and fighting about those rituals, and sometimes they were banned, and you know how it is. Dogen, in the time of Dogen, they were still going on, and they're still going on in some places. And so a couple of themes kept coming up around these dragons and the dragon stories. And one of them was flow, that came up so much last evening, yesterday. So both the kind of flow that we witness inwardly, just sitting, and everything that flows through, and I wouldn't even say necessarily flows through you, because pretty soon you don't know if it's through you or it's just through everywhere. But we kind of witness inwardly that flow, and the flow we find ourselves inside of. You know, that moment when you're in walking meditation and you're not sure, am I moving through the courtyard or is the courtyard moving through me? And along with that, questions about what transforms, sometimes slowly and sometimes suddenly, my own sense of and my relationship with that flow. For me, that's been a kind of key question of my practice. What is actually transformative in not like erasing separateness, because that wouldn't really make any sense, but shifting my relationship with the separateness and not separateness that I experience when I'm paying attention with flow. So, you know, with the sense of separateness comes those questions about how do I manage this? How do I make this work? You know, this life. How do I come to terms with it? How do I get it under control? My poor dear father, whom I adored, for his whole life, as far as I know, when we would talk on the phone, he would open with, "Hi, sweetie, everything under control?" Sorry, Dad. Not gonna happen. So, you know, so I, that, but that, you know, we try, right? To get it under control. Relationships coming and going, body aging, security in the world vanishing, you know, lives and life itself endangered. and my own inner work's changing, you know. So how does that go towards a more real and also happier relationship, an inner experience of wholeness, of non-dividedness, yeah? The flow of flow not being unidirectional, which, you know, we're used to thinking about, but all-inclusive. So a different sense of flow, right? Of an ongoing interpermeation that is my real experience, a flow, in a many-directional kind of flow. And looking both inward and outward. So what, sometimes that shift just happens, right? And, but we'd like to be able to repeat it. And be able to rely on it a little bit more. That sense of everything included, everything in motion inside of this stillness. And that, the feeling of that for me is wonder, is awe. How can this be? How can this be this way? How can it be at all? How can I be? How can any of this be? Not just as singular moments, but as an ongoing undercurrent, increasingly with practice. The thought accompaniment of this feels to me like what the Lanavatara Sutra calls the practicing the forbearance of no self. Kind of a weird term, but I kind of love it. It's different than tolerance a little bit, but the forbearance of no self still does have to do with being able to stand it, right? And that, like, you think about forgetting, forgiving, you know, foregoing. And there's a lovely sort of Anglo-Saxon generosity to those in my mind. I don't know why. But the forbearance, the willingness to bear it, feels like to me. To bear the scariness of not being able to define who am I. You know, we spend a lot of energy trying to get a clear picture of ourselves and asking other, and trying to figure out why other people can't see it, you know? Never mind that I can't see it. How come they can't see it, you know? And so the forbearance of the acknowledgement of how self is not going to be so easily defined. That practice seems to me to have, we learn it, you know? And it has to do with the inner knowledge of interpermeation, the willingness to experience that over and over and over again, pleasant and unpleasant, you know, easy and difficult, light and dark, the many forms of that experience of interpermeation. So this also connects with the storehouse of consciousness, the Alaya Vijnana, right? Where the image that Joan brought in that it's I don't think originated with her but is really helpful is of leaves falling into a pond, right? Just lay one after another as the experience of our ancestors, of all beings, and of our life or lives, and those around us, you know, fall into being together and can really give rise to a lot of hindrances and a lot of formation of a sense of self and all that, and is also the womb of Buddha action, the Tathagata Garbha. How weird is that, right? And so, and it's not that easy to, you know, the Lankavatara sort of tries to describe where the flip happens, but at least the red pine notes and translation encourage us to think that they're just trying to help us not be so scared about no self. And so this, and I feel like I'm not helping to make a connection with this. That storehouse. It feels like as I stop seeing that as a collection of things that happened to me or things that I did, things that I have an opinion about, things that I have various stories about that need to be revised because, after all, was it really that way or not, or was it some other way? You know, all of that work that's done to maintain a sense of my separate self, as the experiences in our meditation and in our working together and in our ritual and in our lives challenge again and again those old scripts and expose us to the awesomeness of being, then I think something starts to have different results. That storehouse becomes a place from which we can come forth into the world more freely and more happily. So I noticed coming down the highway to be here, how, you know, coming through those long, wide valley spaces between the lines of mountains and between the river and the railroad, the going, the flowing through and the being flowed through to arrive here was just so much a sensation, sort of visceral sensation. And then here we land in the Sonoran Desert where that holds us widely, you know, that has that other sense of flow where time, what is time exactly doing? Something different. And the relationships among things and beings and light and shadow seem different. And we're held and inhabited, you know? So you feel like you're in the desert and the desert's in you, like I'm in the milk and the milk's in me. And so there are many kinds of shifts like that, right? And we can be alert to them. We can recognize them and go with them, you know? And there's a con that says, before enlightenment, you're used by it. After enlightenment, you use it. And I've always been curious about that because what kind of using is this, right? And it feels to me as if it's more, it's sort of describing that shift from Alaya Vijnana to Tathagata Garbha, where instead of having sort of reacting to, being in a mode of reacting to stuff to try to protect the self, we go towards a softer relationship where what is in inner and outer experience becomes what enables us to step into a situation and greet it freshly and generously with an open heart. So what about Wan Yin riding the dragon and coming back? What if that image is representing, for me anyway, not some unattainable ideal, you know, some compassionate, wonderful being I'm never gonna be, but instead the way things actually are? That's different, isn't it? What if under my feet as I go along, just being what life is doing in this particular time and place, which is all I think I am, which is to say, learning the doing of nothing, in a way, right? Not trying to. What if under my feet, as I go along like that, being just that, the generosity of simply being, being willing to just be, you know, just like this, to come forth just as I am, what if under my feet is the power and protection of things just as they are? That dragonness, a mystery inside a mystery, that is both powerful, unpredictable, constantly coming forth and then returning to vastness, ungraspable and simple as floorboards and porridge. You know, all of that. Even the wars, even all the forms of impending doom that we feel, all of it. What if that is exactly what our one-ness rides on? So how do we actually live this? Yunmen held up his staff and said to the assembly, this staff becomes a dragon. It has swallowed the whole universe. The mountains, the rivers, the great earth. Where do they come from? Or where are they to be found, is another translation. So how does this connect with our figure? I'm going to go for a little bit longer. Are y'all hanging in there? I love, actually, this stick was made by Bob Marsh of the Common Way community. And I love how it sort of has this bird or fish, you know, in the process of transforming into dragon quality to it. But this stick, so, you know, this staff, this practice, this what you lean on, you know, when you're walking in the dark. This has become a dragon. This way has become a dragon. And so hanging with that koan, it has become more and more the expression of my experience. And I'm aware that, I can only honestly talk about my experience. And your experience is going to have the quality of your experience. But I thought that I would share this, that this practice has become the enveloping, the totally infusing presence of that potency of change, of emergence, of flow, the continual unfurling of you, of me, of each and everything, like the dragon who appears in a cloud, or in the spray, or in the bottom of the stream, or in this room. Dragon-like, the awe that I experience is, comes and goes, appears and disappears, but it is always present inside of everything. And it's always present here. It's always here, you know? Just as I'm always here. Where else? So, then what about, again, that image of Wan Yin riding the dragon? I can feel it, even though I'm not living that ideal, as I say. It's more a sense of, yeah, we do, I do ride this dragon mind into this world of suffering and beauty. I do meet what I meet. And it's a little bit like, for those of you who've read the Vimalakirti, you know, the chapter on did you come for the seat or did you come for the Dharma? That walking forward on, you know, barefoot on bare ground. We can do that, and the practice helps. Coming to meet what comes to meet us. It feels like that, and knowing that we're held. That was a long time coming for me. You know, my refrain for an awful long time was, why should the universe give a fig what happens to me? And what finally happened was realizing, because I'm it and it's me. You know, it's like, well, why not? So the most intimate meeting place, I think, of this is breath, yeah? Which is why all of the instructions come home to breath. And sometimes we forget to talk about it, about breathing, about inhabiting breath, about letting breath open you, letting breath help you find how you are already open, how you are already continuous with everything. And there's not really anything else you need to do, but it's really helpful to do that. So that sitting still and letting mind and body again and again return to center, breathing, learning not to resist as it goes through all of its changes, to stay, yeah? And learning to listen inside and out and to stand simply and honestly in the presence of what comes, all of our hard, you know, one of the beauties to me of a retreat like this is the waves, is how big the waves can be sometimes, you know? That I can be sobbing at one moment and 20 minutes later I'm giggling, you know? And none of it is false. That chance to sit for a length of time and witness. And to allow the wildness, you know, the unharnessed metamorphoses of mind and body and world, like the dragon, you know, sometimes laughing, sometimes so fierce. And then off the cushion to allow the tenderness, on and off the cushion. You know, which is sometimes the keen pain of a wound, you know, or a wound in the soft flesh of the world, of ourselves, of the ones we love. Sometimes the joy, you know, the quiet wonder that just overtakes us as we look at the globe mallow flowers or the little goldfinches in the bush, you know. Dragon, the rainmaker. Rainmaker. Tears too, yeah. So lastly, and there will be some time for conversation, not a whole lot, but some. Hakuin asked, how can original, with regards to the staff become a dragon, come on, whew, knees. How can original non-duality turn into self and mountains and rivers, love and hate, right and wrong, the cat and the ladle? Isn't that great? Should I say it again? He asks, how can original non-duality turn into self and mountains and rivers, love and hate, right and wrong, the cat and the ladle? How indeed. So coming back just for one last koan, and this is the one that I love so much about Lehman Pan meeting great master Ma Matsu, and asking, what is a person who doesn't keep company with the 10,000 things? And the keeping company he's talking about, I think, is really kind of to do with stuckness, right? I don't know, that's probably saying too much. Anyway, he asks, how about a person who does not keep company with the 10,000 things, all the stuff? And Ma says, I'll tell you, when you swallow the waters of the West River in one gulp, so here's a little bit different story about swallowing it all, right? Getting that big. And that was all that Lehman Pan was already, he'd already seen Shoto. He was ripe. He was ready. And he did it. He swallowed. He gulped. And he came back and said, had a great opening. It just, everything fell open for him. And he said, from the 10 directions, we have equally gathered together, each of us learning the doing of nothing. And I just love, that's us, right? That's us-ins. We've come from the 10 directions, gathered together equally, each of us learning the doing of nothing. So that's where I'll leave it. Now we have time to hear what might be coming up for you. And that can include, it doesn't actually have to have anything to do with this talk. It can be just what's coming up for you as you, you know, this evening, as you've come through the flow of the day. It's helpful to hear from each other, you know, what's happening. It makes the, well, it helps. Joy,
could you say more? I'm really struck. It's just sticking with me what you said early on about those feelings that are yours. I'm paraphrasing, but that are yours alone, and that to trust them and to believe, and maybe I'm adding something here, but against all evidence.
Mm.
Can you say more about that? Or did I get that right, first of all, Emily?
Oh, well, that's what you heard, and that's good enough.
I don't do so well with that all the time.
Yeah, well, you know, I have usually 5 minutes after I say something, I don't remember it, so it doesn't mean I didn't say it like that. But there is something about trusting that your own experience is your own experience, and that there's not a way for that really to be wrong. And it doesn't mean that your beliefs about, you know, your story about what happened couldn't take you in a direction that will make you learn something else, but that Again, if I am what life is doing right here and right now, which is not as much a thing as it is an ongoing life unfurling itself, then what comes up in me is what life is doing. And if I trust life, in some way I need to trust that too. Is that kind of what you're getting to? It feels that way to me. Yeah.
In the vein of that, there's a place where the storehouse, we built it.
Uh-huh.
As we accepted things, mm-hmm. and we modified it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also something that we have to trust. It's not just thinking that really happened.
Right.
But what did I do with it?
Yes. And in a way, yeah, I'm agreeing with that. And the only thing, the I that built it. I have a question about that I.
Yeah.
Yeah, because so much the what I call I is inclusive of so much more than I think. Yeah, yeah. But yes, it's the stuff with which the ongoing activity of me is happening. Yeah. So to call it the source of all evil is already an opinion, isn't it? Yeah. Mary,
I'm thinking about when my husband and I first moved into our house in our neighborhood, there was this tiny little girl, maybe three, and her brothers, you know, riding trikes, going by on the sidewalk, and then they started growing up.
They were so cute back then.
And I just remember how this little girl was so interested in what I was doing out in the yard all the time. And would ask me, what is that? And then one day she came up, you know, had pulled some of my flowers. And said, what is that? But I was just so interested in her. Her interest.
Yeah.
And then I think she was 7 or 8. Her name was Melody. Mm-hmm. When she was around 7 or 8, I was going through a really rough time. I was having lots of anxiety and just depression, up and down, up and down. She came to the door, rang the doorbell, and she sang, I don't remember even the song right now, but she sang a song for me. It changed everything in that moment, it felt like. You know, and then she went along her way to school or wherever she was going. But she did tell me, you know, that her dad said, you know, her name, Melody, had something to do with her singing.
Ah, yeah.
You know, and over the years, there were just little incidents where we just had interactions.
Yeah.
And it just felt so meaningful to me.
Yeah.
Just how our lives kind of came together and then went apart, came together. Yeah. And not just not consistent.
Right.
You know, just came together and then, you know, and then I saw her when she was 18. And they were leaving the neighborhood. And she didn't know what was going to happen because they got kicked out of their house.
Oh.
But she told me she was going to open a restaurant someday. That's the last I've heard.
Wow.
I still got a rock in my yard that she gave me. I don't know, just somehow it just feels like what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Where you don't really know what the end of the story is going to be, and
right,
it's just so random.
Right.
And you can't pin a meaning on any one piece of it either.
No.
Yeah.
Just
yeah,
moments.
Lovely. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Flow. Although that's long. I just put legs on a snake. Sorry. Wonderful. Thank you for bringing that.
Sarah, when you just said you can't pin a meaning on any one part of it, that seems very important to me, like, because I think that's what so is certainly so easy for me to do. Like, oh, well, that has a meaning. But things do have meanings. But how would you recommend it to the idea of when you were saying earlier that just walking is being what the image is. So that meaning, like the meaning, the need for meaning. Or when the whole thing is a flow and coming and going, so then what does one do with this need for meaning?
Well, I will tell you the advice my teacher gave. I'll pass it on to her. Her advice was hold it provisionally. I thought that was pretty good advice. So yeah, just not too tightly, right? Allow it to change. Allow the meaning to, you know, when you yearn for it and you create it, allow it not to have to be too solid. Yeah. That's easier said than done, isn't it? Maybe. But meanings shift all the time on their own, don't they? Hi, Kelly.
I'm wrestling with the dragon. And I love that. What Mary said about the, that 8-year-old girl, because I'm really curious about encouragement and transformation, and it's like the little girl is the dragon.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've been having some, some deep retreat, things going on, and you go, well, and can you hold it? No, it's amorphous.
Right.
Everything is changing, but the encouragement from everyone here and from the space that somehow embodies dragon, but I still don't know what dragon is. I really want to kind of know, but I know now I'm never going to know, so I'm just like, okay, write it and whatever, but I'll be on it. But I love that this space creates, and even the name encourages the space to create the dragon to encourage us to flow.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, what is the relationship between encouragement and flow and transformation? That's what comes up for me.
Yeah, thank you. Right. Yeah, you know, at that moment it won't stay, but it won't go either, really. And I love the way what we do relies more on the things we don't know we're doing than it does on the things we think we're doing. You're agreeing with that?
Oh, they said darn.
Yeah. Do we have so little to do with it? I don't know. I think I saw a hand somewhere on the side.
It was me, but I forgot.
Oh, okay.
Sir?
Okay.
Hopefully this isn't a conversation killer.
Go on.
It's a superpower. Kill it. So you were, this is actually from your talk, but I forgot the first of your phrase, it dropped away, and the last part of the phrase is talking about this is the only reality.
Uh-oh.
And so I'm sitting here trying to think of the complement of the only reality.
What is the only reality?
Because I'm pretty much convinced, which is probably part of the problem, that that there can't be, that it's a null set of what is, can be considered to be the only reality.
Okay. On the other hand, you have to act on something all the time, so whatever that is what you think is real.
I need that again.
Maybe that's not true. I think rather than...
It's kind of swatting at flies and trying to swallow camels, I think. But... Or maybe it's a line in my current koan, and that's why I'm really interested.
Well, that question about, you know, what is real, is certainly a question that comes up.
Yeah.
And so say a little bit more about what it is that you're wanting to do with it.
Because when I hear that phrase, I can't imagine anything that can't be included in it.
Oh. Okay.
And yet it came out of the talk because you're describing something that was, you know, da 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 is.
In that moment.
Yeah.
That was on page 3.
Whatever. Yeah, whatever reality. That's like, okay, but if something can be that, then it kind of just jumped in my mind that there has to be something that you were saying that there's something that's not.
Oh. Okay. I don't remember. Sorry.
I was going to say that. I said you have to remember. She said she doesn't remember.
There we go.
Yeah. No, I'm not trying to wiggle out of anything, but I don't remember really. And it doesn't really. I'm not sure. Does it matter what I said about that? You're having some thoughts about it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I have a thought about it. Might as well throw it in.
Okay, yeah.
When you have to act, you have to choose from all the realities a reality.
I guess I don't see multiple realities.
Oh, that's what you're saying. I thought you were saying you do.
Yeah.
Well, good luck.
No help here.
Because I see what's in front of me. Well, I mean, even if some of my assumptions about my life may not be factually true, but it's still a reality if I'm even going to pretend to act upon it.
It's your reality.
Well,
okay.
And therefore it's the reality.
So okay, so the face you see on the computer screen.
Yeah.
It's a real thing you're seeing?
Absolutely.
Okay. And
I mean, I can dig down to pixels and and light waves if I wanted to, but that's not very important. I mean, what's important is that there's a picture of you on the other side of that.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you're not on the other side of it. You're just right there.
Okay.
You're as present as anything.
Okay. So how does this affect something for you? So tell me, why is it important for you right now?
Oh, because you guys are going to ask me when I try to address this line in the koan. So maybe that's a dragon I can live with for now.
What else?
I tried.
Conversation killer.
Yeah. Supercar.
Of all the realities you had, you chose that one.
Who chose it? Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh. Laughing dragon.
Yeah, like I said.
Hey, I'm interested in the doing nothing part. In the falling off the log, in the fuzzy mind, all being the dragon. I think I always think there's something I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And at this point in a retreat, I always feel super worn out, like nothing left, you know. And it's just so encouraging to me to hear that that's it.
Yeah, to me too. You get to be you.
You know, one time I went into see Joan, and I said, not much going on. and I said, is this dull? Is this dullness? And she said,
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Trungpa Rinpoche said more than once that the great virtue of Zen is boredom. Mm-hmm. And that was a kind of interesting thing to say, like, about the doing of nothing. So it's not, you know, I'm not wanting to encapsulate it, but there is that feeling of just the discomfort. We'd like to be entertained.
That relates to what I forgot
before. Oh, okay.
Because the doing nothing, or the doing of something, say artistic or anything, it always feels so self-indulgent. Mm-hmm. So how is that not feeding the self?
So say a little bit more about that, about the feeling of self-indulgence.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Martha was saying, I should be doing something else.
Uh-huh.
I should be doing something, many other things, you know, that other people think are important in the world. But what I want to be doing is come to this retreat or whatever, you know, whatever it is, play music or whatever.
Right.
But not the things I think I should be doing. Not that I know what they are, but, you know,
but
there's a whole list.
There's
a long list. Yeah. And then everything that feeds my soul feels self-indulgent.
Yeah. It sounds like you're really questioning that. Seems like it's worth questioning. Yeah.
But I only want one answer.
A real answer?
Yeah, please.
One thing that came up was a different way of saying that phrase. I'm pretty sure it's Hamilton. Instead of saying the doing of nothing, which implies You know, you could extend to I am and practicing doing nothing. Hinton says, nothing's own doing.
Mm. There we go.
It's nothing that's doing the doing, and that's what we're practicing. So it's not focused here. Nothing's own doing that is here,
yeah.
coming
that's
out.
That's really helpful. Yeah, it is really helpful.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, let me tag one thing onto that, which was another Trumper Rinpoche thing, which was about, you know, theism. He said that I have no problem with believing in God. The problem I have is believing in you, believing there's a you. No problem believing there's a God, but I have a problem with believing there's a you. And, yeah.
That's kind of that, yeah.
Yeah.
And even when you were saying it, I was thinking, I was still putting a sort of a personification on it. I was thinking life doing life, or life nothing doing nothing. But that's actually better.
And that's what I was going to say, Andrew, like nothing doing you. I mean, say nothing doing you. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Like nothing coming through you doing nothing.
Nothing with a capital N.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Nothing coming through you.
Ah,
nothing.
Yeah.
And then even
with
your self-indulgence says who?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's nothing in the sense of nothing too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Todd, were you going to say something?
Yeah, you said you're not one to encapsulate. Could you encapsulate exactly how you got to that?
How I got to what?
Being one not to encapsulate.
Oh.
Were you always that way, or is that part of your
practice? Will I ever be that way? I think I probably do that a lot. But I don't think it's that helpful when I do try to sort of sum something up. Was there another thing you were wondering about that?
Did you come to this sort of understanding of that through your practice, or
yeah,
is it tied in that way?
Well, you know, there's probably some personality stuff in there too. You know that I'm a person who's like. On the other hand, it drives people crazy. So, on the other hand, it could be this way, you know. So, I guess it's probably a combination of things.
And you're not wrong. We might as well face it.
So, we have some. What's our timing here? It's time to close.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you.